Today's podcast brought to you by Elders and Reinagard by Zoetis. Hello, I'm Kerry Lonigan. Welcome to The Weekly Grill. Today's guest on The Grill, a bloke with a truly unique position. He is the board chairman of Australia's only beef abattoir cooperative. Officially, it's called the Northern Cooperative Meat Company Limited, known as NCMC, or better known still as the Casino Meatworks. That bloke is from Casino in northern New South Wales, John Seckham. John, welcome.
Thank you, Kerry. Thanks for the invitation.
John, it's a unique description to have the only beef abattoir cooperative in Australia. You must be more than a little bit proud to have that title.
Certainly are, Kerry. Our cooperative, as you know, has been around for about 90 years. It's a very strong advocate of the Country Meatworks Association, and in that organisation there are a number of cooperatives and council-run abattoirs at the time, and slowly, one by one, they've all gone by the side, and we're the last man standing in that regard.
Yes, you get your first mention way back in 1933. What does your company history say about that time? You didn't start processing that until much later, but is there a mention of what was going on in the abattoir world at that time?
Well, in the abattoir world, I think it could be fair to say that it's very much in its development stage, and there wasn't a lot of information about processing. There were a lot of butcher shops, and that's where the company started, in someone's local butcher abattoir. We had our carcasses chilled in the local dairy factory, and I believe, about 1939, they gathered the money together to build the plant on the site we're at today.
Yeah, there would have been a lot of dairy farmers in your catchment area at the time, and your father was also heavily involved, I'm told.
Correct. Yeah, there were a lot of dairy farmers. This area was a prime dairying area. It was originally settled from the Ballina area, the people landing in Ballina and moving westward. The Norco Cooperative, I believe, has got a long history of being involved in this area. And
that's still going strong, isn't it?
That's still going strong, still a cooperative, Yeah, and as you said, my father, amongst others, had a strong interest in seeing this cooperative stay, develop, be innovative, and adapt with the times, which it has.
How many co-op members in the early days?
Look, I don't know the register in the early days, but certainly six gentlemen started the organisation. And I don't know the profile, but it wasn't really until membership really didn't take off until a bit later when we started introducing toll processing, which is, I believe, was in the 50s.
Yeah. So when did you first process that? You processed before the war, in fact, didn't you?
Kicked off in 39. They approached the members for a raise, and they weren't able to raise the full amount. They needed £30,000, so they went to the rural bank and in 38, I believe it was, and in 39 they started killing at the site where we're at now. And they saw the main rail link between Casino and Sydney and Brisbane, so they were able to ice the bodies and load them onto the wagons and send them to Sydney.
It's £30,000. It would have been a lot of money in those days. And, of course, one of the initial features was, did you build your own ice making machine there?
I believe so, yeah. Because we had to load the carriages, so they had to ice up the wagons before they could put the carcasses on,
All producers at that stage, all production or other at that stage, was for domestic production, I assume?
Yes. Most of the production went down to the Homebush meat markets. And they were then sold and distributed from Homebush. So that was mostly a domestic local butcher trade out of Homebush.
And you've already mentioned that in the 50s there were meatworks everywhere. I'm guessing some of them would have been cooperative, but they didn't survive. Some of them at least would not have survived.
Very, very much so. And you can drive around the landscape and see the hulks of a number of meatworks that were around, and they just couldn't, once the pressure got on to especially export, you had to meet certain criteria, especially to get into the US, the local organisations, whether they be the councils or the cooperatives, just weren't able to raise the money and, build the facilities they required to get into export.
You mentioned you were in the area and your dad was one of the leading lights in the early days of the co-op. But you moved away from the area for some time, didn't you, including doing an ag degree at the University of New England?
Correct, yes. I did. I was in the late 70s. I completed an ag degree and then went to Sydney in early 80s to work with the Australian Meat and Livestock Corporation.
Oh, good old AMLC. You were a veteran of that.
Yeah.
Right, okay. And you worked for, I understand you worked at Trangie Research Station?
That's correct. I left the AMLC to move with departments and went managing research stations and ended up at the Trangie Research Station, which is absolutely an amazing place. But, I ended up there managing the resources on the station.
And the AMLC, what was that like working in those days?
Well, it was it was only a small budget of about $5 million. And I always remember the levy was always a worry, and they were worried that the levy was going to go up a few cents so we could, they could raise another $500,000 to keep the place going.
And they're still talking about the levy, aren't they?
Yeah, but no, it was, look, they were extremely dedicated staff. It was only small.
Yeah.
But it was very much focused to providing a service to the industries that we were working in.
In those early days, again, did the casino co-op exclusively service members, or was a decision made at any time? When was a decision made to make it an open meatworks?
I think it was back in the 40s that they did start trading in their own name. That was their intent, for everybody to share in the, I think their motto was everybody to share in the toils, to get rewards from everybody's work. So it certainly started off with that main ethos. But one thing about the cooperative here is that it's always maintained a very commercial focus on how it raised its capital and how it serviced the debt. So very early on, they realised it's a difficult business back then because people didn't quite understand what was going on. So they started almost straight away to toll process for other people.
Yeah, we'll talk more about your finances in a little while, but at the moment, we're on the grill for Beef Central. We're here for Elders and Rhino Guard from Zoetis. Back in a moment. Breathe easy with Rhino Guard, the only single-dose intranasal vaccine for control of IBR in your cattle. Get in control of bovine respiratory disease, that's BRD, before it begins. Just deliver a single intranasal spray of RhinoGuard for rapid IBR control and add a single dose of BoviShield MH1 for protection against pneumonia. For rapid protection against MHN IBR in your weaners and pre-feedlot cattle, breathe easy with BoviShield and RhinoGuard. Available from your local vet today.
For over 180 years, Elders has proudly been supporting Australian livestock producers. Elders supports your business across the production cycle with more than 350 livestock agents, access to specialist livestock advice and auction services. Draw on our established relationships to buy and sell commercial and stud livestock across domestic and international markets. Enjoy Delcredere guaranteed payments when you sell with Elders. Livestock funding also available subject to approval. Elders, for Australian agriculture.
You're back on the grill, where our guest today is John Seckham. He's the chair of the Casino Cooperative, which operates that town's abattoir and is one of the, or in fact is the only beef abattoir cooperative operating in Australia at present. John, let's talk about co-ops. Are there any disadvantages in being a co-op?
I'd like to think not. I mean, the co-op say is about everybody growing together, sharing. And you see that more and more today, people wanting to, farmers markets, et cetera, et cetera. Even on a small scale, people wanting to work together. But the big problem we're facing with the co-op is obviously capital raising. Bigger industries, financial institutions don't really understand how a co-op operates. It could be fair to say that it's an old-fashioned way to go, but look, there are many very, very successful co-ops.
Yes, indeed. But they're not in your tough business, are they?
That's the difference. We don't require 100% supply of members' produce.
Yep.
For instance, there are many examples like a quote where a co-op set up. If you're a member of a co-op, you send 100% of your produce to that co-op.
Yeah.
It's a free and open market. We've always operated in a free and open market, and to that essence, it's a pretty difficult gig in being a beef co-op.
Would there be room today in today's lightning fast business world for a cooperative style setup in the abattoir world?
Look, I always hold out hope, and but I think it would take a change of thinking of again on how capital is raised.
Mm. So when you need capital, you go to the market, don't you? You go to the bank and say, listen, we want to borrow X number of million dollars. Who's going to give us the best terms?
Yeah. We do a couple of things, and that is certainly our main. But, we obviously also go to government, and I do pay credit to both state and federal government who have been able to assist us along the way at certain times. They certainly have been able to help us, but the commercial financial institutions, bear the load.
Yeah, I have to assume that in the meatworks, you have to keep your meatworks up to date and efficient, and it requires from time to time a decent whack of capital. Have you ever had any problems or issues seeking that capital?
To date, that's what we've had, no problems. In the last 5 or 6 years, we spent about $80 million upgrading the plant.
$80 million?
And we've been able to secure those fundings through various means, but it's all done on. And the board, just doesn't go off and borrow the money. We look at the efficiencies that money will, that CapEx will bring, the savings, the improved bottom line it will present. In other words, we've got to be able to make money and move forward, get ready for the next round of CapEx.
You got a big boost, though, when you first started to export, didn't you? When was that?
Back in the 70s. I think that was, a lot of abattoirs then had to upgrade themselves to get into the U.S. and Europe.
Yes, you're going into Europe, which is pretty unusual for these days. What were you exporting? What sort of cuts were you exporting? Do you remember?
I believe we were sending a lot of calves, calf sides.
Well, yeah. So where's the abattoir at now, the co-op? How many people do you employ?
We're between 1,000 and 1,100 we have on the books.
Yeah.
We have about just under 500 members now.
And your exports? You were humming at one stage, and then you had the issues with China, didn't you? But tell us about where you're exporting nowadays.
Yeah, that was unfortunate, China. We saw it as a hopeful that we'd be gain relisting back into that market. Any other market that we basically have protocols for nearly every other market in the world.
Yeah.
We obviously go to the big ones, but people who process with this, our member operators.
Any signals that you might get your accreditation to China restored? Have you had any Chinese gentlemen walking through your plant, ticking off boxes, et cetera?
No, I don't think it's going to happen that way. No. It'll happen that just a piece of paper will pass over someone's desk and say, yep, they're okay.
Yeah. you did something I know, which is, if it's not unique, it's very rare. You built an on-site tannery at your meatworks. Tell us about that.
Yes, you did. It was quite forward-thinking back in the day. They partnered up with an Italian family and company to produce wet blue hides, and they operated as a joint venture for a number of years, and eventually the co-op bought the family out, and it's now in our own name. But it's one of three, I think it's only three wet blue plants left in Australia, and wet blue being the first stages of tannery. Of tanning.
So, yeah, it's still an issue, isn't it? What to do with hides? Because they're worth nothing or even less at the moment.
When it's good, it's good. When it's bad, it's shocking. Yeah. Sort of those ones. Yeah.
What's your plant capacity now? How many are you killing?
We're doing around 5,500 a week at the moment, which is below our capacity. But one of the problems we're running into, like every other business and abattoir in Australia, is finding staff to be able to take us up to our full capacity.
It's an issue everywhere, isn't it? But you've got dongers on your site. You actually have dongers, I understand. Is that right?
Yeah, there was a road construction highway being done, and they were selling off of their construction site. So we thought, well, we're going to need them to house even if not our own staff, local staff who can't find homes, we're going to have to rely on overseas staff. So we grabbed enough to make 60 beds.
That's fantastic. The staffing issue has been in abattoirs and meatworks around Australia for as long as I can remember. Have you got any suggestions how it might be resolved?
Well, yes, we've had problems, Kerry, in the past, but we've always had walk-in, people always walking in looking for a job. When I say always, that's probably the majority of the time. We've had pretty good walk-in. I think then it became a question of working out why those people might not have stayed as long as we'd hoped. So, improving working conditions and the culture of the organisation, or doing all those at times retain staff, has always been very important.
Yeah.
But at the moment, I've got no solution. We're busy trying to recruit staff from the Pacific Islands. We've got around about 170 on the books at the moment, I think, and we're looking at bringing in another 50 or 60 odd to. But the big thing is we're looking for skilled staff.
Yeah. You don't train a boner in the morning, do you, a skilled boner?
No, you don't. No, you don't. And that's a huge cost to the business too, in that training exercise. So, no, I've got no solution except I'm hoping somehow or other it's all going to turn around. And we are getting walk-ins, people walking in now looking for work, but not like it used to be. But I can say I'm very proud of it, that we do have a better culture in the place, and we are looking at very active ways of retaining our staff and offering different services too. Yeah. The board's actually looking at other ways of enticing staff, like a childcare centre and all sorts of things.
Cooperatives are very, very involved in the communities generally, but you've been there for so long, you must be part of the fabric in Casino.
We are. We're very proud of it. I mean, even the name, we went through a few name changes, as you're probably aware, and in the end of the day, Casino's got to be the forefront of our name, because that's where we are. It's who we are. We're very proud of where we come from. Mm. And we like to recognise the fact that we are from Casino, distinct from the Northern Rivers or whatever other destination you might have. And look, we supported Casino through thick and thin, and we've involved in the our Beef Week here at Casino.
Yeah,
we support a number of other activities around town. I think the most important thing, if I on just on the community, was the floods in 22.
They were appalling then. They weren't that absolutely appalling.
Yeah, well, the plant itself wasn't affected, but many of our staff were. And the call out went that we needed a few people to help organise some aerial drops. And I was pleased to see I went in there a few days later after I got myself organised, and the place was humming with staff organising parcel drops to go on the helicopters. And I joined the helicopter loading teams, and they just didn't miss a beat. It was hard work, but everybody just stood up. They all wanted to help their local community. In fact, one of our staff members lost nearly everything, and his house was still inundated by the time things started to wind down. But he was there every day helping.
It was certainly tough times for that northern New South Wales region. The floods are much more devastating than people might imagine, I suspect. You've just got to go there and visit to see how terrible it still looks after these years. But, John, the last few years have been extremely tough for meatworks across Australia. Has it been a battle for the co-op to keep their head above water?
Yes, it has been a battle. I wear two hats, and on one hand, it's been a terrific on the livestock side of it, just to receive those prices in the paddock that we were getting for cattle a few years ago. It was absolutely astonishing. We could not believe some of the values we were pocketing, but at the same extent, meatworks were having to pull right back or dig deep into their pockets. And one thing as a co-op, we don't have these big, deep pockets. So we found it very, very, very difficult. But I'm pleased to say we're still here, and we've got a head above water, and we're still looking ahead. We're still looking at how we can move forward, and of course we've now got to start looking at how we're going to manage the next big black swan that comes along.
Yeah, exactly. Some said meatworks would be losing X number of dollars per head processed, but you had to stay in business, didn't you? How deep was the pain? I mean, how did you go close to shutting down or anything like that?
Not close to shutting down, but yes, on some lines of cattle, there were figures of $300 or $400 a head we were losing through that period. But no, we were able to keep ahead because during that time also, because we're a toll processor, our operators were still coming in, our loyal operators came in, and they were still processing as what they can to maintain their own markets because, it's very difficult. As you realise that once you've established a market, you just can't walk in and walk out as the time pleases. You have to keep supplying those markets, even though we might be losing money.
Yeah.
So our loyal operators stayed with us and helped us get through the day. Plus, we had our own markets we were supplying, so we had to service them as well.
But you seem to be doing okay at present.
Touch wood.
Back on top, yes. John,
it's a funny old game. I mean, we'd be doing so much better if we could have some more staff. But it's a frustrating business. So it's a business of small margins. The overheads are enormous, and you need need bodies in beds to help make the business pay.
Yeah, I'm of the view. The casino would hardly survive without the cooperative.
In a town of, 11,000, we're employing, 1,100. We're reasonably significant employers of the town, We're very conscious of it, too.
Yeah. Oh, the community is so important for you, and you are so important to the community, of course.
Yeah.
John, second, the casino co-op is a remarkable example of survival, but it seems to be flourishing in an environment where it's so much a survival of the biggest. Thank you for joining us on The Grill for Beef Central.
Well, thank you, Kerry, for the opportunity. Much appreciated.
And thank you for joining us. Until next time, I'm Kerry Lonigan. This has been The Weekly Grill, brought to you by Elders and Rhinogard by Zoetis.